Okay, awesome. Great. I would like to call today's meeting to order. It is 2:30. Is there any public comment? All right, hearing none, then I'm going to move to the approval of minutes from the November 12th, 2025 meeting. Are there any changes to those minutes? All right, hearing none, do we have a motion to approve those minutes? Thank you. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. Is there any discussion, further discussion before we vote? All right, then let's vote. All in favor?
Aye.
All right, any opposed? All right, minutes are approved then. All right, I believe we are going to move on to some bus stop requests. To approve three bus stop requests, and we'll approve those requests in as three separate. Would you like to break them into three separate votes, Devin, or do you want to vote all together for those bus stops? Which would you prefer?
I could probably do it all together.
Okay.
Hang on, my presentation just went blank.
So we have three bus stop requests: Mary Baldwin University, Farrier Court, Elizabeth Miller Gardens, and River City Bread Basket that we're, Devin is going to be giving us a little bit of information on, and then we'll be voting. Hopefully, giving us a little bit of information on, and then we'll be
voting. Let me try to pull up the power. Had everything loaded and ready for you.
Of course you did. We believe you.
Slow to start. Request coming forward for you all today. We have a few in Stanton and one in Waynesboro, so we will start with the Stanton stops. So that's going to be in Mary Baldwin University, as well as Elizabeth Miller Gardens and Farrier Court apartment complexes. So we had Mary Baldwin reach out to us late last year requesting some additional access at their upper campus. And Stanton Housing and Redevelopment Authority reached out requesting two stops at their apartment complexes, Elizabeth Miller Gardens and Farrier Court. So to give you all a brief overview of what we're going to be looking at today, I just wanted to pull up existing conditions of where the West and North Loop is operating, because both of those requests are on that, around, in and around that area. And so, as you can see, this is the West North Loops, and the Mary Baldwin stop request is going to be kind of looking down around here, and then the Farrier Court is going to be here, and Elizabeth Miller Gardens is over here, just to kind of give you all context of where the route was going in relation to those locations. So Mary Baldwin, don't worry, I have a map after this to give you all context if you're a visual person like myself. So we had Dr. Todd Long, who unfortunately couldn't be here with us today, reached out requesting additional access for students near their upper campus. So currently we are serving them at their lower campus. where the stops are located. So for this stop request, we will be proposing two alternatives, and then we'll have one recommendation by staff for you all to take a look and vote on. So one maintains the current access with some additional access to Mary Baldwin campus, and the other prioritizes access to the campus while taking away some of the current service, namely the intersection at Edgewood Road and North Augusta. Also in this scenario, in both scenarios, social security offices would become a fixed stop. So currently that is a call stop. So if anyone needed to utilize that stop, they would call dispatch. So for this first alternative, the path of travel would have the bus continue on North Augusta. So actually right out here, normally it would turn at Terry Court and go up the street and then access North Coulter. In this scenario, it's gonna continue going down North Coulter Street and then turn or on North Augusta and turn on North Coulter Street via Mountain View Drive. And then from there, it will travel on North Coulter until it gets to Prospect Street. Normally it would turn on Edgewood, so it would be going a little bit further to turn on Prospect. And then it would travel along Tam Street to North Augusta, which would put it back on its normal route to end up at the Lewis Street Hub. So with this proposed route of travel, we would be adding quite a few new stops. Like I said, the social security offices, which would become a fixed route stop, Belmont condominiums, Parkwood apartments, two stops along Mary Baldwin out there, Westmoreland parking area in the physical activity center, and then also at North Coulter and Virginia Avenue, where the subway station and gas station are. So logistics and timing for this, it would be an additional 0.7 miles of travel, but really wouldn't have much of a timing impact just because all of these stops happen at the end of the route. So currently it's going to be doing its normal route, and then this would just be an add-on to the very end. So there really isn't much of a timing impact per se, and there are no safety impacts on this particular scenario.
Devin, before you move on, I know there were some additions. Are there any stops that are taken off this alternative?
No, this particular alternative, there would be, there would be one stop removed. So when I said it follows up Edgewood Street right now, we would get rid of the Edgewood stop, which is not a very utilized stop.
Okay, thank you.
So like I said, here's a visual representation of everything I just said. So it's out here traveling on North Augusta. Like I said, we're here at Terry Court Shopping Center. Typically it would travel this road, but it'll just be traveling further down Augusta and then turning back on Coulter, adding the social security stop, the Belmont condominiums. It would continue down its typical route, so it's usually following this particular pathway to get to the YMCA. Like I said, it would normally turn up Edgewood, and that's where the stop would be lost, is right about here. But it would continue to turn on Prospect and then turn on Tams, where it would pick up Parkwood, the two Mary Baldwin stops, which don't get through campus, but that's going to be the second scenario. But getting two stops on Mary Baldwin, coming up to get back on North Coulter, and then stopping at that subway. Because currently, BRT let us know that there are some users that typically will get off around this portion of North Coulter to be able to get to employment at the King's Daughter, the old King's Daughter Hospital, but also the subway station. So it would just be providing additional access for not only Mary Baldwin, but for regular passengers as well. And then here's the timetable associated with that. Like I said, all of these first stops really won't change much. We did shift the Middlebrook Avenue Moore Street, which that's the Middlebrook Trace Apartments that we added. So just shifting that time to better align with how it's been operating. But like I said, Terry Court is still at 8 minutes after the hour, which is what it's been operating as. And then the addition of Social Security in Belmont and the YMCA stop shifted by, I think it was a minute. And then they would add Parkwood, the two Mary Baldwin, and the North Coulter, but it gets back to the hub at 7:30 anyway. So like I said, that's really the time shift is that everything is at the end. So then alternative two is basically the same, but instead of from Prospect to Tams, it would just stay on Prospect Street and come out at North Augusta and resume its route. So it again would get rid of that one stop on Edgewood, It would only add one stop at Mary, or it would add two stops at Mary Baldwin, but wouldn't add that other stop at the subway or the North Coulter and Virginia Avenue. So you get one last stop out of this particular scenario. Again, timing is the same as well as 10 miles of travel. This one does have a little bit of a safety impact in that there are narrow streets through Mary Baldwin. So that presented a little bit of a red flag for the operators just having to navigate streets that have parking on both sides of the street, and then you have a bus trying to traverse a narrow area. So here is the zoomed in version. So again, it would come up North Coulter, turn out to Prospect, continue to Wood Apartments, Westmoreland Parking, as well as the Tollage Building. So like I said, it would be going straight through campus with those narrow streets, all the way down Prospect, and then turn on North Augusta, and then getting back on route, stopping at the library as it currently does. So again, here is the timetable associated. Again, like the other alternative, really, is just timing at the end of the route. So through all of that, staff recommended alternative one, mainly due to it having the safest travel path option, not having that safety challenge of the narrow street, but also that it's maintaining existing stop access and service area, but also adding a little bit new areas of service as well. So I'll give a little bit break to make sure no one has any questions about this first one. But yeah, a few more to go. Okay. So we will move on to the second request to Elizabeth Miller Gardens. Like I said, that this is part of the Stanton Redevelopment and Housing Authority. They have two apartment complexes associated with them, and both are currently somewhat along the Northwest Loop. Like I said, Barrier Court was more in the northern sector, and Elizabeth Miller Gardens is more in the western sector. So the nearest existing Bright bus stop to Elizabeth Miller Gardens is the Bellevue and Ranson Street. So you can see up here, this is where the closest existing Bright stop is. So travel out and back to Elizabeth Miller Gardens is approximately 0.8 miles and about 5 additional minutes for travel. That increased travel time is really based on the low speed through the complex, speed bumps, and no turnaround area. So this coupled with increased passenger, pedestrian, and motor vehicle traffic kind of created a few red flags for the service operator. Similarly with Barrier Court, its nearest existing stop is of Dungie Street and Baylor Street. Again, it is about approximately 7 miles travel out and back to get within the complex. And again, it is about an additional 5 to 9 minutes added on to the route time. Again, just having to go slower through the complex, going through speed bumps, and not having to go loop through the entirety of the complex to turn around. Correct me if I'm wrong, Phil, buses don't go in reverse unless absolutely necessary. Right. Fixed route and backup. So it would go loop through the entirety of the complex, which adds that 5 to 9 minutes. Again, the safety risks are the same. There's no need for turnaround area and the increased risk of pedestrian traffic and motor vehicle traffic that could get caught with the bus. So for this, staff recommended that both locations be served, or they can be served by ADA complementary paratransit access, which is our Bright access. And so they're both locations are within that 3/4 mile of the ADA paratransit service. So that would more just be Danielle and I going to the Stanton Redevelopment and Housing Authority and educating their staff and educating residents on utilizing that service, like the application and window, as well as how to schedule rides and having them get service that way. Because it sounds like in talking with Susan, they were really advocating for folks who did have mobility challenges to be able to have access to the bus. So this would serve everyone's purposes without putting the fixed route in a little bit of a tighter spot, because those access buses are a little bit smaller, so they're a little bit more maneuverable in those smaller parking lots.
Do we get feedback to see if that feel like if they feel like that's going to meet their residents' needs.
Okay, we do have a representative, not to put you on the spot, but is that something that would, well, at least in the beginning, be a good start to have you all really push out the ADA paratransit, because that is really curb-to-curb service, so once they apply and are registered with the system, then they are scheduling that ride, and then buses coming into the complex to pick them up.
The ADA serves now, and currently some of our residents that we have there. The biggest question is just that long walk that a lot of residents who aren't ADA have to make all the way down, not Donahue, but Baylor Street. You also had on there Willowview. That right there is Willowview to the bottom where you get circles all around. That's not
our complex. Not part of yours.
That's not. We're just up there.
But that would probably still.
But that long, you can see we're Ferry Court.
Ferry Court goes down and it doesn't have the turnaround.
Correct.
Thank you.
There, Elizabeth Miller and Ferry Court, I think they're. So you're saying you can't. They would have to turn around at some point, right?
They have to back up. So they would have to end up back. Phil, is that right? You would have to back
out. Yeah, you don't have a roundabout or.
No.
Yeah, we would have to put it in reverse and back into a space to get back out.
Did we look at a space, a place that we could have a existing stop or create a stop that is closer, even if it's not going in and dropping off on curbside at the door?
I guess in both of those scenarios, because they just kind of end up feeding into the apartment complex, I don't think there's anywhere closer, because that's the problem, I think, especially with this one, is you see that long narrow stretch to get into the complexes, but then there's no good.
That's why we drew it to go around that complex that's not associated with yours, is because that's the only way we could figure out how to turn around with their having backed the bus up in your complex. So that neighboring residential area had the ability to go through it, so.
May I walk up to the board? Just a question. So, in this scenario, you're coming into Ferrier. What are you doing? Because this is a dead end here. How are you
right? We wouldn't be able to go down there. So we were thinking they could walk up to where those intersect up above the blue dot, right where the F is.
Here.
Right. Up
here.
Right there. Yep.
So you're supposed to come here, but.
And then we would have to go down around that complex and then come back out completely.
Yeah, we're not going into Ferry.
Yeah, we couldn't get down there and turn around with the bus.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking, is you don't even have to. This stop right here would be the ideal location for Willowview, I think, and for here. Mm-hmm. But so you're saying our office is right here, and it's not, but they're not able to turn around. The school bus comes in and kind of turns around.
And puts it in reverse and backs up.
Yeah.
At this time, fixed routes don't put it in reverse. It's too much liability. Okay.
Yeah, that would be. Okay, so you're not coming in.
No, just going on. Okay. And then the drawing for that other complex was the added time of however many minutes, how many speed bumps going through there.
Okay. Yeah. And there's no way, where would you be coming into here? There's here, but you'd have to back up. There's nowhere for you to, in Elizabethville at all, you'd have to back up anywhere.
Right.
There's a T right here, but you would have to back up.
Years ago, what they called the silver trolley used to go up Bellevue and get right near that complex at Elizabeth Miller Gardens. And we use that as the turnaround for the trolley to get back to West Beverly and then go back out because it was beyond the gas station. Cash's Convenience, what it used to be, and now the new J&D Court. So, but now it turns around at the food line at the end of West Beverly. But it used to go up through Bellevue and then swing past. It wasn't into the complex.
Yeah, right.
Right. But it got a lot closer than it does now.
So down here, Bellevue?
Mm-hmm. It doesn't have a name on it yet.
So I guess with that information about Bellevue being closer, we could explore that further, but to start out with the ADA access and pushing that out.
Yeah, making sure that everyone who's eligible is signed up.
Yes.
Okay.
then yeah, we could further explore some areas that get it a little bit closer and seeing that old route pattern.
Perfect, thank you.
Okay, one more. So we're in Waynesboro, so shifting your geography a little bit. Again, I just wanted to show some existing conditions through Waynesboro and its route. So the addition of River City Breadbasket, or the proposed, is going to be over here after social services, to give you some context. We have had the pleasure of collaborating with LifeWorks and River City Breadbasket. For you all that don't know, their mission is to empower their neighbors with practical supports to uplift and thrive, and their client choice grocery outlet is located on that Winchester Avenue location. So as the others, there is a close by existing stop, but still a little bit of a walk. As you can see, the current stop location nearest there is 4th Street, which is Valley Market. So with this proposed travel, you might look and say, Devin, it would have made sense if you had just stayed on Winchester Avenue and turned back on Delphine, but that would be a little bit more challenging for the bus because the 4th Street exit out here is not controlled by a stoplight. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's utilized the 4th Street, because there's a stoplight to be able to make that turn on Delphine. So for this, it would travel on Delphine, but instead of going over here, it would just make a turn on D Street and then travel up on Hamlet over back over to Winchester and come out here. So this puts it in the mid-block area. So as you can see, River City Basket is here, so it kind of splits that difference there, but gives it the ability to turn back on Winchester to travel back up to 4th and then get back to that light and resume its travel pattern. So that does add approximately 1.02 miles to the travel path and does add an additional 4 to 5 minutes to change that travel pattern. So that is a little bit of additional time on an already tight schedule. And then again, the logistics having to be by that light at 4th Street rather than turning left on Delphine without a light. So staff recommendation is to start this as a call stop. River City Breadbasket operates Thursday evenings and Fridays midday, so it would only be utilizing that stop as people would call during those time frame hours anyway. And the beauty of this is if the call volume gets high, like we did for Valley Apartments, we can just have a very designated time crunch of saying between this time and this time, it's not a call stop. The bus is going to go there regularly, but then at all other times it's call stop, just to make sure. So that would be the kind of compromise for that one, is you're taking on that extra time, but you're not taking it on every single run in case the bus would get behind. It would be able to make up its time accordingly.
So I like the idea of it being a call stop, especially since it's very specific hours, and then River City can advertise to its neighbors that that's available. I think it is going to be helpful for dispatch and the drivers to understand what those hours are as well, so they're aware it may be a little bit busy during that time. And they may have, because I know this has been something that River City has been interested in for a bit, so we may see some volume during that time.
Okay, so that is the end. Okay. So I can go back here, because like I said, I don't know, but I think it would be easier just to do it all. If you all are going to support all the recommendations, it would be easier to do one motion. If you don't want to support it, then we can make it into three different scenarios.
Can you go back to the second one?
Yes.
And what is your all's recommendation again for those two requested stops?
To promote the Bright Access paratransit to residents.
For both
Elizabeth Miller and Barrier Court, but then also with that new information about getting closer to Bellevue on that previous route, taking a look to see if there are some other options that can get us a little bit closer.
Okay.
That, you already come down Bellevue.
Yeah, Bellevue and Ranson is where as close as we're going to get.
That's where you go.
That's where
you're as close as you can get. The only thing that I would say is I understand Elizabeth Miller would be difficult. We have more senior citizens there, so the ADA portion of it would be more used for that. The Ferrier Court is breaking them up. You're kind of grouping both of us together. I think the Ferrier Court is more durable, especially if you're adding Willowview to that, would service two apartment complexes and eliminate that long street. It's a street walk. There's no sidewalks. There's no anything from Ferrier Court up to the bus stop at the Northwest Loop. I would petition for adding Ferrier Court and not Elizabeth Miller Gardens. That allows you not to have to turn around but still service Ferrier Court and Willowview Apartments, or Willowview Complex, which is quite a considerable amount of people.
So, I guess for Ferrier Court, because Phil, there's no, unless we just were to table it and try to look and see if there are any other alternatives, but
I mean,
just
can,
going down.
Right, we can run timing scenarios going through Willow and see how many minutes does it take, but Northwest is a very taxed route. It's a lot of stops on the Northwest, but I can run any timing scenarios that you like.
Okay, so I guess what if we tabled Elizabeth Miller, or so it sounds like you wanted to say no to Elizabeth Miller, put that more as an ADA education kind of component for us, and then prioritize getting a little bit closer to Ferrier Court.
Yes,
because it sounds like Elizabeth Miller is more senior.
Senior head,
whereas this is going to not be the same senior population.
Correct.
Okay.
There's a lot more families, and both of those, a lot more townhomes, so a lot of families with children, people that may not have access to vehicle or such.
Okay.
And of course, this is all fixed income. You know, we are public housing, essentially, so it's all a lot of fixed income folks who do a lot of walking or rely on transportation, public transportation for teachers.
That's a long way to walk with kiddos and groceries. And
it is. I see a lot.
Okay, so for that particular one,
I have a question.
Oh, sorry.
So if you're looking at 5 to 9 minutes, you're going to run scenarios on this, but if you're looking at 5 to 9 minutes, what else is going to be given up?
I would say that would be
during the day that accumulates to how many runs that are 5 to 9 minutes.
Yeah, we'd have to take a look to see if something would have to come off and where that would come off during those time scenarios of running, how that would work out. So, because yeah, you'd have to, let's see, pull up the, so yeah, we'd have to just take a look to see where that time would go in meeting that request. And then if it goes over that hour headway mark, then that's where you would have to start looking at, do we not stop here? Do we change the route pattern here, kind of thing? So that would take a little bit more work. So,
and there may be a stop there that's really not used as much. So you never.
So yeah, you kind of can juggle to see. Yeah, if there's an area that's not being utilized, and taking that off to be able to get closer to Ferrier Court and being able to make up the time there.
Yeah, I guess I wanted to clarify, like on the stop requests that usually come in like with us getting the information, I guess for the first time and seeing it, is and again, some of y'all might know, I'm still new, still trying to figure out your all's process on this. Is this like, do y'all meet usually with city staff to go over, like to, I guess, get like input? Or, because I kind of feel like this is a bit on the fly, at least, like, especially, like, I can't comment on Waynesboro because I don't know anything about that stop. I just, you know, just figuring out what a normal process is on this. And again, I'm not trying to mess up anyone's vote. I'm just trying to figure out, because I don't know if, like, you know, if I could have talked to, like, people in the housing department or, like, community development to maybe have more input on this, so it could be, I guess, a bit more refined. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess typically if, like when the Middlebrook Trace Stop came about, that was with the developer and the city, so that's where the city would get involved. But if you all want more involvement, we can.
No, and I didn't know too, again, with like how, like the funding, like, cause when this would happen, like in Hampton Roads, when stops would come up, each city was basically paying for the service within that district, so the city had input. But if this is like a shared cost, then it, you know, to me it makes sense that everyone has, you know, that my opinion doesn't matter any more than anyone else's.
Yeah, since it's a regional system, we try to keep the Essie Paula.
I was going to say, I mean, typically in a perfect world, that's what this advisory committee is for. You are all representing your organizations that are funding the system. And so this is the venue where we would present that.
Yeah.
I think the challenging part is that we get a lot of these requests and they want a quick turnaround, or we want to be able to implement them as soon as possible. And we only meet with this group every other month. So I would recommend in the future that we can try to get the information out to you guys well in advance of the meeting, so you have time to review it, so that when you come to the meeting, you know, you've had a chance to talk through with your groups and come with a recommendation. And what we could certainly do today is we can table these votes until the next meeting. And, you know, it sounds like for Ferry Report, we need to do some additional time checks and evaluation of that route. But, you know, if there are any questions, we can table them, do some more analysis, get you guys that information, and then bring them back for a vote at our, I guess it would be our May meeting. The only trouble there is that it just delays the implementation of getting something out there. But I mean, that's what this board is for, is to evaluate and deliberate on those decisions. So I don't have a problem with, you know, doing an additional analysis and then getting back to the group before the next meeting if that's what you guys wish.
Thank you for the clarification. Again,
I'm not
trying to.
Yeah, no, that's a valid question. Yeah.
So it sounds like we should break the vote up.
Break the vote up.
And make sure. First, is there any more discussion before we, or questions before we break the vote up and go to each recommendation individually? Okay. So we'll start with the stop request for Mary Baldwin University. Is there a motion to approve Mary Baldwin request? And to make it clear first, this is going to be the alternate one for this based on staff recommendation. All right, motion to approve this one.
So moved.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you. Any further discussion before we vote? All right, let's vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the first request for Mary Baldwin is approved. All right, now we're going to go to the second request. And for this, we are going to just be voting on Elizabeth Miller Gardens. We are tabling Ferrier Court for our next meeting where we're going to have more investigation. And for Elizabeth Miller Garden, we are going to go with a recommendation for them to use the ADA microtransit and for the team to provide education to the services to the about the services to the residents. So this will be based on this recommendation, but only right now for Elizabeth Miller Gardens. Any other discussion before we proceed to motion? All right, motion to approve?
So moved.
All right, second. Any more discussions? Thank you. Thank you, Mark. Any further discussion? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. So we look forward to hearing more about Ferrier Court.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, and then we're going to River City Breadbasket as our last one. And the recommendation for this is to implement it as a call stop during their operating, or the whole time, specifically because of their limited operating hours. Any additional changes or questions about this one? Okay, motion to approve this one?
Move to approve.
Thank you. Second?
I'll second.
Okay. Moving to a vote, all in favor?
Aye.
All right, opposed? All right, hearing none, it's passed.
Well, thank you all for your patience in going through that, and we will go through the Superior Court and add that to the agenda for the next meeting, and we'll run a few time scenarios of how that affects it, and looking to see if there's any alternatives to make up that time elsewhere.
Look at that stuff out to you before the meeting so you have time to review it before we come prepared to vote at the next meeting.
All right, now we are going to move, thank you all for those. Now we are going to move to information about the remote area medical clinic, which is coming up at Augusta Expo on Saturday, March 21st, which is coming up very quickly. Do we have someone here to speak about that? Or on the screen, excuse me. Hi, Marina.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk. My name is Marina Cora. I'm part of the community host group, along with my colleague, Bria, who's also up here. and yeah, we'll just give you a little bit of information if you guys aren't familiar. I know Bright has worked with Gareth Bartholomew in the past, and he had created a similar program for our last clinic where they promoted the bus routes, didn't create their own shuttle. So this time we're very excited that we are working with you all to have our two shuttles that will be going around Waynesboro and Stanton to bring patients directly to the clinic and be doing loops every hour, because the goal of remote area medical, I probably should have prefaced with this, but it is extending access to medical, dental, and vision care in rural communities and in general for communities that otherwise wouldn't have access. So there's no ID requirements, no need for insurance, and all the services are free. So having a way for people in the community to access the clinic if they don't have a car, and removing another additional barrier was highly aligned with our mission for the clinic, so we're very excited about this process. Yeah.
Thank you, Marina, and I think we'll just pull up some of those maps we have here so you guys can see the bright routes. So this first one, this will be the Stanton route. The Augusta Expo, we'll stop at the Stan Walmart and a Lewis Street Hub. And then the Waynesboro shuttle. Go to the Waynesboro Walmart, Broadmoor Plaza, and Stewart's Drap, and then Augusta Expo. And we also have a lot of materials. If anyone doesn't have them here who wants them, just let me know. We have a bunch of social media posts. We have posters that you can print out. Feel free to share the posters, social media, with any groups, organizations, or among yourselves. Yeah, Marina and her team have been great to work with, so we're really excited to try out these Bright shuttles, and hopefully we get a lot of ridership. And it is free ridership on the Bright routes, just for the shuttle routes that Saturday. And the I don't know if Marina said, but it's a two-day event, but Bright is just providing transportation for the Saturday. So, yeah.
We're also very excited to work with you all. If you have any questions, you can chat them out or feel free to email. But like they just said, we would really appreciate if you guys can spread the word about this. I know Danielle and her team have worked really hard to get this project going, so we would love it if we could get a lot of turnout on the shuttles. I know that you guys have a community outreach email that you were going to send out the flyers to your community partners. I think that's one way we're getting the word out, but anything is helpful.
Great. Thank you so much, Marina and team. We are so thankful that Bram can be in our community again, and I just love that we're able to partner in this way with transit. We know that social determinants of health, like transportation, just have such an impact on also our, you know, physical well-being. So people, if there's issues around accessing healthcare, they're probably going to have issues with other access barriers. So this is just so, phenomenal that we can partner in this way. So thank you guys for everything you're doing and for asking us to partner together. It's just tremendous we can have this resource for our community. So thanks so much. All right, next we are going to move on to the fiscal year 2027 Virginia Department of Rail and Public Transportation grants. Devin, you are up again.
Devin, really good conversation. Marina and Rye, you guys, of course, do not have to stay for the rest of the meeting. You're more than welcome if you're curious what not offended if you all want to log out. I know you're busy students.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you guys. Look.
Thank you, Paul.
Yes.
No, that's fine.
I know they were going to hang on.
And to give you all context, the first time the RAM clinic came, we were able to modify the Stuart Strap link for the one day. Mm-hmm. So this was a step above being able to have the two different shuttles operating. So any ways that we can help bolster that, we will work our magic to see if we can get it done.
Awesome. Thank you.
So yes, the FY27 DRPT grants were submitted by the February 1st timeframe. So we made application for our usual urban and rural operating and capital cost of contracting grants, as well as two capital grants, one for transit facility equipment. The transit facility is getting older by the day, so some equipment does need to be updated. We also put in a capital grant for some bus shelter access for one of the stops in Augusta County. We also put in our usual commuter assistance program operating, which is our ride share grant. And we did put in a project assistance grant for transit marketing for Bright, just similar to what we did for Afton Express this past year. So it's just a grant solely focused on marketing Bright resources. So we did some TV ads similar to Afton Express, some geofencing, and some paper, just because we know that print marketing, just because we know our audience is a little bit older too, so they still get their paper. So we did a multi-pronged for marketing Bright services for the next year. So those are all the grants. And so what happens now is, like I said, they were due in February, and they are reviewing applications now. I think we were on a call with Kyle earlier, and he's still going through applications and doing all the scoring. And then the draft six-year improvement program will be released in April, which we'll see those staff recommendations. And then the Commonwealth Transportation Board will vote on those recommendations at their June meeting.
Okay.
So then once that's approved, we get the contracts and we're ready to go. So hopefully all of those grants that we applied for made it through, and we can get some of those improvements.
So at our meeting following June, then we'll hear the outcome?
So yeah, and the May meeting, we'll probably have the draft set. If okay. It's available after that April timeframe, we'll be able to say it's in the recommended scenario. So okay. As long as they go in the recommended scenario, then yeah, then the July meeting, we can say like all of these were approved and how we're going to get started on them.
Awesome. Any questions for Devin?
Devin.
Oh, yes.
Hey, everyone. It's Kyle Trussell at DRPT. I just also wanted to commend the CSPDC team. They did a great job on putting these applications together, so kudos to them. I also just wanted to say, yeah, kind of echoing what Devin was mentioning, our timeline, still everything's on time. I apologize I'm not with you guys today, but I'm trying my hardest to kind of get through all this scoring. This is definitely our busiest time of the year, so... appreciate your all's flexibility there. But yeah, looking forward to hopefully having the draft step out here shortly and moving on the funding. So thank you all.
Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you, Kyle. Any other comments or questions for Devin or Kyle while we have this expertise? Great. Thank you all. We'll move on to Afton Express update. Danielle.
Yes, thank you. So as of December 1st, I'm sure everyone is aware, the new schedule was launched. It's been up and running in our weekly meetings with BRT. It seems like the riders have definitely settled into the new schedule. People are happy with it. So great job to BRT staff and the riders for a smooth transition. There was no hiccups with service at all, so everything's going well with the new schedule. Additionally, ridership remains steady. We're seeing higher ridership overall than last year, growing at a steady pace. Since the new schedule, there has been no major increases or decreases as of now. And in terms of the marketing grant, that is underway. Currently, we have two commercials out airing across the region, so hopefully some people have seen them. Me and Devin have definitely heard that people have seen them.
Danielle, so, what are they airing on? Like, where should we be looking for them? Are they on streaming platforms, regular, like, linear TV, where are they airing?
Definitely cable and a little bit of streaming.
Okay.
So they spotted us during, I know, the Olympics, the Super Bowl, and a lot of the time during Jeopardy, which is a hot spot.
For certain demographics, yes.
Yeah, the news station is the
MW29.
As part of that campaign, in a few weeks, we'll be shooting a new spot with them as well. So the business spotlight, where we'll talk about the Afton Express service. It's just a 2-minute segment. So that should be good too. That'll be shown during a news hour as well. And that's everything for the Afton Express right now.
Awesome. Thank you. Any questions about Afton Express? So, next we have the Virginia Transit Association Transit and Rail Advocacy Day. I was like, I'm not going to get through that without twisting my tongue. And proposed session legislation. Danielle and Paula?
Yes, I can start on that one. So, I attended the Transit and Rail Advocacy Day. That was February 2nd in Richmond. I went as a representative for the CSPDC and the BRAE system, but also as a member of the Virginia Transit Leadership Institute. So we started in the morning with a legislative briefing at VTA's office where we really got to hear about the transportation and transit bills, got to hear, speak with other VTA members, partners, CEOs, government relations experts. So really that discussion was all about policies and how they affect transit across Virginia. And then mid-morning, the VTLI class, we went to the state capitol to the chamber floors for the Senate and the House, and our group was actually introduced and recognized by a senator to the rest of the chamber, which was really a really meaningful experience to represent something important to all of us. And then in the afternoon, I spent it in the General Assembly building and met with our local representatives, or in some cases it was with their staff, but I talked about our transit system, right, and why it's important to our region, and briefed them, and advocated for the few transit bills. Unfortunately, those bills did not end up going through, but nonetheless, they got to hear about the BRAE system in our community over here. So overall, it was a really exciting and productive day. Interesting to see how things work in the government at that level, and I was happy to be able to represent our system there. Yeah. Paula, did you have anything to say about that?
Sure. So there were a couple bills in this session that were proposed that would have had a pretty significant influx of revenue dedicated for transit. Unfortunately, those bills did not succeed out of crossover day. There is still some language being worked out in bills, or as part of the budget process, that might still contribute some funding to transit. I think they're kind of hung up right now on debating how to fund WMATA in Washington, D.C. So yet to be seen on whether or not there'll be any influx of funding for transit through that budget process. There were two somewhat transit-related bills that did make it out of crossover and are headed to the governor's desk to be signed. One we've been tracking closely since last year, which is a little bit concerning. It's a new kind of labor requirement bill that would require municipalities and transit authorities and agencies that contract out their transit service to pay their contracted service providers, operators, and staff comparable wages and provide comparable benefits to those of a municipality. So if you have, you know, a diesel mechanic that works for the locality, you would have to pay your diesel mechanic for a bus similar wages. For us, it's really confusing because we're not a municipality and we don't have any of those comparable positions. So it's kind of yet to be seen how something like that would affect us. I know that from some of the agencies in Northern Virginia, they are also quite concerned because it would put an undue amount of stress on their budgets without any kind of additional funding to support it. There has not been a fiscal impact study done by the General Assembly, so there's additional concerns about that. Some of the agencies in Northern Virginia would be potentially looking at, you know, $17 to $20 million in their increase of their budgets if they were to have to comply with this. So It died in committee last year. It made it through sessions this year, and like I said, is headed to the governor's office to sign. I know that our transit agency, our advocacy group, has been tracking that closely and is going to try to find out some more information about that, what that might mean, and advocate for maybe there to be a delayed implementation or additional time to study what that financial impact could be. For us, it would not affect anything retroactively, so it would only go into effect when we renegotiate or renew or extend our contract. at the end of our next contract term, so between 5 and 9 years from now. So it's, you know, not going to affect us right away, but definitely something that we want to track as a transit support community anyway. The other bill is a little more positive. It would expand the parameters for what the TRIP program can be used for statewide. We get TRIP funding currently to support the Athens Express. It's the Transit Ridership Incentive Program. I think my understanding is that it's been kind of underutilized across the state, and so they do have some funding available to support projects, and that this bill would change the language and potentially broaden the scope of the type of things that could be funded through that program. So, as always, we're in support of anything that brings additional funding opportunities to our transit, you know, programs. So we'll keep an eye on how that plays out. The TISDAP committee at the state level will review how that is going to be implemented and what the language of those changes would be. But I think that's a positive move forward for that. That's about it.
Thank you all for those updates. Next, we have a contractor update.
All right. Well, thank you. For Virginia Regional Transit in staffing, we have a couple commendations that I wanted to bring to the table. And two of these happened on the same day, February 21st, at about noon at the Waynesboro Walmart. We did have a male passenger that was unresponsive on one of our buses. The driver took immediate action, called for rescue and assistance. And Waynesboro was able to resuscitate the passenger, and everything is okay. So, but the same driver later that night had a passenger that had a seizure on the bus as they arrived to the Stanton Walmart. Being right in front of the fire department, they were able to just dip right into the parking lot and get them assistance as well, which was fantastic. So that driver's name was Alma Meadows. And she does a fantastic job for us, and we're just so proud of her. And so we gave her some kudos there within our organization. We also received, through the Bright Transit website, a commendation for one of our drivers, Mr. William McCauley. And they were saying that their self and their wife wanted to commend Will or William, not sure which he likes to be called, as he sometimes drives to Afton Express. He's great, always speaks, makes conversation, and is a very cautious driver. So just great to hear those come through in our staffing. We also want to congratulate our operations supervisor, Mr. Leroy Sweezy. He received his CCTM, which is Certified Community Transit Manager certification through the Community Transportation Association of America. So that is not an easy task. He did a great job, and we're just so proud of him. So we did have a safety meeting this past Saturday, had a great turnout for that. We provided breakfast for everyone, and the training was centered on FTA's required compliance for annual drug and alcohol testing and with regards to BRT's alcohol compliance program. So in fleet, all of our route vehicles are operational with no current major breakdowns that would result in any capital repair. We did have a few little minor things that happened. One took the Stanton trolley offline for a little while for an EGR valve replacement. And then one of the Afton Express buses had a diesel exhaust fluid doser issue, but we got that corrected. Both are back in operation at this time. We provided the CSPDC with some fleet branding information and schematics as they transition to a new contract provider. And in the last month, we've removed all of the Passio brand MDTs, the mobile data terminals from all the buses per the request of the PDC, and we've returned to paper passenger trip sheets. There are some pros with that is the Passio system was a little inaccurate. It wasn't capturing all the data that we needed, and it may have affected some of the ridership numbers negatively. But there are some cons in that is we've lost our abilities to track with GPS, because that was really nice for dispatch. They could see on the screen where the buses were. When the call comes in, where's the 250 connector? Well, we could look and say, well, it's about 4 minutes out. It's on its way. So we do miss that and the ability to send them text messages and things to check out at the hub when they got there. But that's okay. So we've moved on from that.
Does that mean your drivers have to do manual logs now?
We do. Yeah. Okay. It's tick marks on the trip sheet.
Okay.
They're easy peasy. Okay. So. With operations, as Bright is under FTA triennial review, VRT provided answers to a 33-question ADA RIR, request for information. We've also provided vehicle maintenance plans, vehicle inspection sheets, operator's manuals. Kyle, I know, is listening, and he's keenly in tune to the ADA program, but we've the drug and alcohol program, but we've submitted all of our MIS reports, a lot of procedural responses with regards to ADA policies and procedures, and vehicle maintenance records and things of that nature for the FPA reviewers. So it's a very in-depth process every 3 years. We've not failed one yet, and we're not going to fail this one. So that is our goal. Don't fail. With regards to ridership, since our last meeting in November, the statistics are in November of 25, we had 15,764 rides. That was down a bit from November of 24. In December, 13,939. That was down a bit from December of 24. January 26 was down as well at 13,890. February of 26 is the good news. We ended at 17,033, and that is a 10% increase over February of 25. So kind of dipped and coming back, but as Danielle mentioned, the Afton Express continues to do fantastic. It's part of those numbers, but for the last 2 months, they've beat the same months the previous year. So it's doing really, really well. Got something great to be proud of. That's all I have with regards to BRT participation.
Great report. Thank you very much, Phil. That was really in depth. Are there any questions for Phil? Okay. Paula, you have information on the turnkey contract services for Bright?
Yes, well, it's kind of, as Phil alluded to there, we have completed our procurement process for our turnkey contract. As you know, for federal compliance, we have to go out at the end of a contract term and do a fully competitive procurement. We did have a competitive procurement with several proposals submitted, and CSPDC has selected to go forward with Resource Management Systems as our contractor. So they will begin service on July 1st, 2026. So they're already getting underway with the transition period. And between now and then, we'll be working closely with them and VRT, who will be on board until the end of June, to make sure that there's a seamless transition. And our goal is that riders won't notice anything on day one except newer buses, because as the part of the procurement, we require that any contractor bring in a new fleet. So hopefully everything will be seamless, the routes will operate as usual, and they'll just get to benefit from some shiny new buses on day one. With that said, I do want to take a moment now to recognize VRT for all their years of service, not only to the PDC, but to this region and running this system. They are, you know, tremendously critical and crucial to where we are today. They've gotten this program to where we are, and we're just really thankful for all the work they've done, and are looking forward to continuing to working with them through the next couple of months in the transition. This won't be the last time you see Phil. We've got, I think, one more BTAC meeting before the end of that contract, but yeah, just tons of respect and appreciation for their work. And like you said, the drivers, you know, there's so much that goes on behind the scenes. We're so glad that we can highlight those accomplishments, but we know that their drivers are doing great work every day that just goes unnoticed. So just a big thank you to VRT, and we'll keep you guys all informed as we move through the transition process.
Thank you for that update, Paula. And thank you, Phil, and your team for everything you all
do. They do a good job. They really do.
All right. I believe we have some other business.
I have a few bits, but I'm going to let Paula go.
Okay.
I did not have Passio on the agenda, but since Phil mentioned that we've removed the Passio tablets, I should give an update on that. Unfortunately, after working with their corporate, you know, customer service team for the last year, really, and trying to mitigate a ton of connectivity problems, we ultimately made the decision to pull the tablets off the buses because the workload of trying to make sure that they were accurate and having, particularly on the Afton Express, having Leroy have to go in and backlog and enter data every day to make sure that the reports were reflecting that. We just thought that that was, you know, a lot of redundant work, and at this point it might make sense to just go back to paper for a few months until we transition to a new fleet, and then we'll see what technology solutions we can implement at that point. So this is just a pause. We are fully intending to go back with our original goal of revolutionizing our riders and not having paper counts and manual stuff like that anymore. But because we are required to report federal data to the federal NTD, we really can't risk any kind of anomalies in our data. So rather than asking the drivers to continue using the tablets and do backup paper, we just wanted to move forward with the paper counts for a few months. That does mean that in that transition period, we will not have stop level data to share. We will still have daily ridership information and by route, but we won't necessarily be able to track where people are getting on and off the buses. So once we get back up and running with our new technology, we'll be able to provide that data to you all for, you know, planning and reporting purposes. But just bear with us for a few months while we transition from one technology to hopefully a new one that works a little better.
And are you in the RFP process for that new technology, or?
So our new contractor will actually be bringing all that technology with them as part of the contract.
Okay.
So no, yeah, no additional work required on our part for that.
Okay, great.
The other update I have is that we have Kayla on Teams with us today. Many of you probably met Kayla at the Value of Transit, State of Transit event. She was also the mastermind behind our Value of Transit video that so many of you participated in. Kayla is a master's student at JMU, and she's wrapping up her final year of her program, and we are thrilled to announce that she is going to be staying on with us as a full-time employee starting July 1st as our new engagement and outreach planner. So her work will be divided between the transit program and some of our other programs, but heavily transit, and she will be responsible for going out and engaging with all of our community members, all of you as our partners, and really putting some of that face time in to understand what your needs are, how they're changing, keep up with the community, like the pulse of the community, and what we can do to make sure that Bright is serving the community the best it can. So she's also going to get certified as a travel trainer, so she can come out to all of your groups and do hands-on training with different populations to teach them how to utilize transit, and just a lot of those kinds of boots on the ground programs that we currently don't have the capacity to do with our staff as is. And I'm really excited that she's going to be leading up those efforts. So, Kayla, do you want to say anything?
I was just going to say thank you, Kyle, for your message. I saw that in the chat. And yeah, just thank you, I guess, for the opportunity to come on full time. I've really enjoyed what I've been able to accomplish already just with, you know, the partial work schedule still as a student. But I can't wait to be able to just apply all of my time to doing stuff with you all and getting to interact with you on a much more regular basis. So I'm very excited and very grateful for the opportunity.
Congratulations, Kayla. That's so exciting. I mean, what a dream to have an internship that results in a job at the end of your, you know, student journey. I mean, that's amazing. And you've done a fabulous job with the video and all the things. So I know it's well deserved. So congratulations, and we'll look forward to seeing more of you.
Thank you.
Devin, did you have other business as well?
Yes, I just had two last things to bring to your attention. Like Phil alluded to, we are going through our FTA triennial review, which covers 21 areas of compliance. The federal government comes in every 3 years, takes a look at all those areas, make sure that we're doing everything appropriately, and if not, giving us that technical assistance to make sure that we are spending those public dollars as good public stewards. We're also going through a DRPT compliance review as well at the same time. So we've been pulling up some financial data.
Double fun.
Well, because they also are mandated by federal to make sure that all their grantees are doing everything appropriately as well. So in addition to that, the Coordinated Human Service Mobility Plan by DRPT has been published. So that's a comprehensive look at transportation needs, trends, and priorities across the Commonwealth. So if you take a look at their website, and if you want me to send the link, I can send you the link of the executive summary as well as the document. There's a lot of good information there with regards to those populations of those with disabilities and as well as the elderly population.
So you guys have a lot going on, and thank you for how well you're managing it and keeping things not just moving but evolving. And so thank you for everything you're doing for transportation in our community. Any other business from the group? All right, well, our next meeting is May 13th. 2026, which for those of you who are interested is my brother's birthday. I'm sure all of you have that bit of information. And we will now adjourn at 3:34. Thank you all so much.
Thank you all. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.